You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
What is up, everyone? Captain Cody Rubner checking in on Tuesday, May 26th. Hope everyone had a nice Memorial Day weekend and made the most of the holiday within the spirit of the holiday. We are checking back in to chat fisheries, and this one's going to be a real quick one, more of just a news update for two things related to the Southeast, a little bit closer to my home waters. First, we're going to start further up the coast with, I don't know why I said coast like that, but further up the coast with a fishery that is near and dear to my heart, but at the northern end, or closer to the northern end of its migratory range. This morning, the Virginia Marine Resource Commission, VMRC, voted unanimously to approve new protections for Atlantic tarpon in Virginia waters. And this is a outstanding step forward, positive step forward for the fishery. I mean, it's common knowledge, and if for whatever reason someone is not as in tune with Southeast fisheries, but tarpon are iconic. They are one of the few fish that are up on the pedestal that, you know, many anglers have millions and millions and probably, at least tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars of state economies and international economies are based upon the pursuit of them. And so Florida and some southern states recognize that value. Florida's obviously been the leader on the tarpon front, not only for the iconic Keys and everything it means to the culture in Florida, also the value, the research effort that's been put into tarpon. And their migration's been very well documented. It's an interesting migration in that these kind of subpopulations of Mississippi River is basically the split, and you got tarpon that are west of the Mississippi that will migrate to the Mississippi, but then not go back or not go further east. And then you kind of have these tarpon in Florida where you have a Keys, you know, migration from the tropics. These fish from the Keys will come up, and if they go west and go up the Gulf and go up to the Panhandle, they will migrate that way off the west coast of Florida, but will come their way back down south. And those fish also can get into the Atlantic and travel as far north as we all see it on social media once a year, where, you know, some commercial angler pulls up a tarpon in a net off New York. And then, a kid caught one off the beach in Cape Cod and all sorts of craziness. And while a lot of people are, calling out crazed AI claims and this and that, the reality is tarpon migration is pretty impressive. The ones that are getting that far north, like Cape Cod level north, not looking too hot for them. I think someone took a wrong turn and needs MapQuest and probably should have turned back around. But the reality is these fish are incredibly valuable and such an outstanding fish candidate for a abundant and flourishing catch and release based fishery. And there's a lot that goes into them. They're so long-lived and living 20, 30, 40 plus years. And there's a lot that goes into angler ethics and handling and et cetera, you name it. But that being said, sustainable fishery, if done appropriately and if managed so, if put respect on, you know, it's interesting to hear a lot of the legends of tarpon fishing from the Keys and like communities, and kind of if we knew then what we knew now. And the culture has rapidly evolved around tarpon. They used to face gaff the heck out of all these things, and they used to snag them in Boca Grande. There's all sorts of craziness around tarpon, but there's been a lot of research on them and a lot of progress. This migration is well documented. And today, VMRC votes to protect them in Virginia. So the regulation takes effect, I believe, June 1st. It just closed on me here. I had it in front of me 1 second ago. But, you know, the basics of the new ruling is that wreck anglers can't possess them at any time. All got to be released immediately, kept in the water. All the standards that you see in Florida, no gaffing and spearing. There's a non-offset, non-stainless steel circle hook requirement to help reduce release mortality. Tarpon they have that Hollywood effect, right? Everyone wants to sting a tarpon on a big fly rod or set the hook on a swim bait or whatever it may be, have it eat a mullet, come tight to it, send it to the moon. It's this big, nasty, aggressive beast, but they're also pretty lazy too. I think that's one of the things maybe a lot of guides don't want to admit is how lazy tarpon can be. And, you know, what a great way to catch them is dead bait on the bottom. And there's some little tricks to the trade there. But, you know, you add in hook requirements to help reduce release mortality. You know, as a wreck fishery, that's all catch and release. Release mortality is the metric that you have to manage, right? That is the dynamic. And then also you add in here that commercial harvest sale, you know, trade of tarpons all prohibited. And just an extra little kicker there that basically you see a tarpon in your nets, whatever these guys are fishing for commercially, tarpon involved, got to be released immediately unharmed. So great news, right? It's awesome to see wins. And this one's kind of a no-brainer, common sense. And to all involved with pushing this forward, great job. To all those who, you know, commented and participated in the process this morning, outstanding job, Virginia. We're going to slide a little bit further south into Florida, where I am set up now, and just going to shine a little light on a campaign that's going on down here. This one's not a win. It's not an action. There's no vote. There's nothing that's, you know, is taking place or took place today. There is a guy by the name of Rhett Morris that I have crossed paths with personally a bunch of times, whether it's Captains for Clean Water related efforts, water quality, water management, and he has put together a really impressive fisheries campaign just for a guide and, you know, his local community and, you know, tagged in some great videographers and people to help put something special together. But we have a new blog that is now live that you can go find all this information at, but also want to cue people in via podcast about the campaign for More Fish Florida. So Rhett Morris is leading this, and I'll actually end of this podcast here with just the audio clip from one of the videos from his campaign. But the short of it is that Florida has swapped over to regional management for snook and sea trout and redfish, and largely ASGA extremely supportive of this. In theory, it's flexibility in the best possible sense. In theory, it allows, you know, two fisheries, because Florida is so big and so dynamic, and Northeast Florida, where it's mud banks and shallow water redfish, and you go just 2 hours south, and then you start to get into Mosquito Lagoon, shallow water, rich seagrass, you know, in theory, again, withstanding the stuff, but the lagoon's starting to have a really, really good year. But rich seagrass and clear water, and you get a little bit further south again, then you're in my neck of the woods, and the Gulf Stream's only a handful of miles offshore. You have sailfish right off the beach, and then you go another couple hours short, and you're in the Keys. And so Florida is so dynamic. Regional management really does make sense. We're fully supportive of it at ASGA. I know many of, you know, the guides and the fishing community that I am just personally connected to in Florida, largely in support of it as well, because it gives you the flexibility to make a decision to say, hey, this area is really not doing good with snook, but why would we shut down the whole Atlantic coast if Northeast Florida is starting to see a little bit of a surge in snook, and maybe there's, you know, that's not as concrete as a long-term solution. You know, big freeze will come in Northeast Florida. You know, the snook might, but there's no reason to make a change to slot sizes or seasons or creel limits or whatever it may be, you know, to try to save Stewart and then in turn hurt Northeast Florida. It's just the fisheries and how dynamic the state is set up a little bit different. So largely in support of that. And we see Rhett put together a pretty impressive campaign that calls for some changes to redfish slots, to snook slots, to seasons, to try to protect spawning. You know, we started off our blog with a great quote that's in this video that you'll hear that is, what I once saw with my own eyes and fished every day is so far gone that when I tell stories about it, I feel like I'm talking about something that happened 100 years ago. And I know all of our striper advocates are listening, and redfish advocates in other states or whatever, and they're thinking, damn, man, you know, that strikes a chord and it hits home. And so Rhett's put together a really impressive campaign. The videography is beautiful. It's like a 6-minute video. And like I said, I'm going to put the audio just from the video right here. But what I recommend most of y'all do is just go to More Fish Florida, just as it sounds, morefishflorida.com, and go see a little bit more about what Rhett's up to. Really enjoy the part of the campaign. It's just not these people are harvesting too many, let's kill less fish, cut and paste theory here. It's recognizing that water quality and all the stuff you see groups down south fighting for, like Catons for Clean Water, you know, that water quality, habitat degradation, you have all these dynamics that are making the fishery that much more difficult to manage for abundance. But that being said, there's no reason to not say, well, all those things are going on, so let's just accept our fate. That's what Rhett's calling for, is some sort of action here, some fisheries management decisions on the front of snook and reds, which are two massive, 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 massive economies and fisheries for the state of Florida. Hey, why don't we make these decisions now and try to have more of these fish in the water? So whether if you like to keep them, you like to eat them, you like to just catch and release them, whatever it may be, while we figure out this water stuff, while we figure out this mangrove and habitat restoration stuff, while we figure out all that stuff, why don't we just make sure that Southwest Florida has enough fish in the water to enjoy, to travel for, because Florida's whole economy is just based on tourism. So big shout out to Rhett. Again, that's morefishflorida.com. Go check it out. We're extremely supportive of what Rhett is doing. Not even just specifically about, you know, all right, well, this slot size and this, you know, first engagement rates, just seeing Rhett take the lead here and say, hey, this is how regional management is set up. This is a grassroots campaign. You know, long tenured, respected guides and his, you know, local anglers and his customers saying, we're dealing with all these things and we're involved with all these other things as well. We're not sitting on the sidelines while water management and all these things are happening, but fisheries management is a dynamic tool. We want to drive some change. And I'm really interested to see how this plays out, to see how FWC responds, to see how these conversations pick up. And what I'll say is, you know, just keep an eye out. We'll obviously continue to amplify this as Rhett, you know, garners more steam and more support, and these conversations make it to a state level. But this is what regional management is for someone who's this well-respected to be able to come to FWC, to the commission, and say, hey, things aren't as good as they used to be. And my local community, here's a small community that says we want to see more fish in the water. What can we do? Here's what I think. What does the science lend to? What is the best decision to make sure there's more fish in the water? And then also calling for accountability from the angling community too, to recognize we all have a role in this. Let's take better care of our fishery. Let's take better care of the fish we're releasing. Let's, you know, police our own community appropriately and make sure that we're supporting law enforcement within our community. There's a lot of things that go into being a responsible angler. And it's important when there's a campaign like this to recognize it, to, you know, people on the other side who just want to see, you know, their only goal is just how much can we kill 24/7. They're not going to see eye to eye with more thoughtful, nuanced conversations, and that's okay. We could try our best to meet in the aisle, but the reality is it's always important for rec anglers, especially if you're running a catch and release business, or, you know, you are largely involved in a fishery that's largely rec release, to say, hey, we have a footprint here. How can we be better with our footprint while we ask for these changes? So that's it. Nice and easy one on a Tuesday to kick you off. Appreciate y'all tuning in for a couple. Hopefully I'm on your headphones on your way home from work and you're getting ready to go fishing, get your gear ready, tie some flies, whatever you're doing tonight. Go get outdoors. That's the whole point of why we fight for the things we love, because we love to experience them. So more fish Florida. Big shout out Virginia. Tarpon are safer and one more stretch of the Atlantic coast. And I'm going to wrap this one up with audio from Rhett's podcast. So without further ado, Rhett, you may not be here with me on the mic, but I'm going to hand you the digital mic. Cheers, y'all.
That's it.
What I once saw with my own eyes and fished every day is so far gone that when I tell stories about it, it feels like I'm talking about something that happened 100 years ago. Any angler who's fished here for a minimum of 10 years can tell you that there's nowhere near the fish now as there once was. For me, the biggest threats that I see are to the snook and redfish populations. The main four: habitat loss, excessive fishing pressure, excessive coastal development, and water quality decline. Never before in Florida's recorded history have all four of these issues been at the level that they are today, and we have little power to change any of them tomorrow. But the one tool we do have is proactive fisheries management.
Nice job, man. Redfish.
The current slot on redfish was set almost 36 years ago. The problem with the current slot is it's 9 inches wide, 18 to 27, and the redfish have a difficult time growing through the slot before they're harvested because the fishing pressure is high. The other glaring issue with redfish management is that they have not had a closed season as part of their management plan for the past 36 years. A snook slot is currently 28 to 33 inches, and we have not updated the slot size on snook in almost 20 years. So the problem here lies in the fact that as they turn into breeding-aged female fish, they're allowed to be harvested. And because of the very high level of pressure, many fish do not make it through the 5-inch slot. And depending on individual biology and available food source, it can take a snook between 5 and 10 years to grow through that 5-inch slot.
See, the thumb goes on top, fingers underneath.
So what I am proposing here is a new proactive mind frame of looking at fisheries management in an era where we have had everything change around this fishery, yet the management has not changed. The kind of evidence we're talking about here is all recorded in public record. In 1990, we had less than 800,000 people with fishing licenses. Fast forward to 2025, and we now have over 2.5 million fishing licenses. That's more than triple. Never in my lifetime have we seen the kind of fishing pressure that we have on this fishery today, and it's time to make changes that are needed to help the fishery deal with the new level of pressure. So talking about snook, the new slot should be 35 to 37 inches. Some people would say, why would you want to kill the big breeders? Well, the fact of the matter is that due to the high level of fishing pressure, most snook are harvested shortly after they reach the current minimum slot size. This eliminates them from the much-needed spawning class of fish. The new 35 to 37-inch slot would allow the average breeding female at least 10 to 15 years to spawn. This would greatly increase the average number of snook in our local waters and increase the quality of our overall snook fishery. The new slot on redfish should be 25 to 27. That will give a larger rate of escapement, which will produce more breeding age fish, and we need to protect them while they're spawning and have a new closed season added to their management plan August through October. So we have a region here, the Greater Charlotte Harbor region. Let's use this as a test zone and try something new to see if we can produce better, higher quality fishing. This fishery still has the power to come back. We can make it so much better just by giving it a chance. So if not, why not? Why would we not want something better if we can give it a chance to be better? Fisheries management is the best tool available with the fastest application to help us adjust to today's world.
That's better. Well done.
Hey folks, Captain Rhett Morris here. I want you guys to think about what you've just learned. At no point in Florida's entire recorded history have our inshore fisheries ever faced this many negative impacts. The coastal development that's happening at record level, sprawling across the coastlines of Florida, is like nothing we've ever seen. The relentless, ever-increasing fishing pressure, the accelerated water quality decline and habitat losses at levels we've never seen in the state of Florida. So this is all part of Florida's new reality, folks, and it's fueled by a mass migration of people moving in daily. Now that you know the facts, are you ready to stand up and push for something that will help our inshore fisheries instead of let them flounder the way that they have been? It's time for new, proactive fisheries management designed in a strategic way to help our local snook and redfish populations rather than let them continue to flounder. If you're ready to see better fishing here in our local fisheries, guys, then let's stand up together and support a better way forward. This is not an act of legislature. It's literally up to the board members of the Florida Wildlife Commission. All we have to do is collectively ask them for what only makes sense. A proactive set of fisheries management regs that matches today's unprecedented levels of negative impacts hitting our local inshore fisheries. If this makes sense to you, then click the link below and let us help your voice be heard. Together, we will make a difference.